We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/lawless. Just go to Indeed.com/lawless right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/lawless. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is a seminal moment in U.S. soccer history. This can help usher in a new era of American soccer. We've lived the power of a World Cup. We've seen what it can do for the sport, the country, and the culture. Now, along with our friends from the North and the South, I have no doubt that we are going to put on a show the likes of which the world has never seen. Hello, Sunshine. I'm Alexi Lawless, and welcome to the State of the Union podcast. From Russia, we are going to continue to look at the beautiful game on and off the field through the lens of red, white, and blue-colored glasses. As you heard, we will be talking World Cup 2018 right from Moscow, Russia. We'll also be talking World Cup 2026 and so much more. Welcome to the State of the Union from Mother Russia. But first, as always, joining me, my friend, my colleague, my guiding light, even in Russia, David Mossy, a soccer savant, a Fox soccer researcher and writer extraordinaire. How are you, David Mossy?
I am good, Alexi. I hope you're enjoying your five-star accommodations near Red Square while I'm slumming it in a whole different part of town. I feel like that Seinfeld episode where Jerry's in first class and Lane's in coach, but we're getting through it.
Oh my goodness, it is nuts. As listeners know, this is my first time to Russia. It is your first time, right?
Correct.
And I don't know about you, but I have already found, in the time that we have spent here in Russia as a broadcaster in terms of Fox, I have already found that the people are incredible. This is an incredible city. And to see each day how it has grown and to see the people that have come into Moscow and into Russia more and more. Every single night, there are more and more fans. Every single night, there's more and more noise, whether it's the Argentinians or the Brazilians or the Peruvians or the Colombians and all over. It is becoming a World Cup in the tradition that I have known being at other World Cups, but also a Russian World Cup. We are recording this the day that the World Cup starts. So we, as a team, from a Fox perspective, have been here for a week. So much has happened on and off the field. We're going to talk about as much of it as we possibly can, but we're going to go through this this World Cup. But while we're talking the World Cup in Russia, the fact is that the biggest thing to happen, and certainly in the last 24 hours, is the United States, Canada, and Mexico won the right to host the 2026 World Cup. I don't know about you, Mossy, but I wake up this morning and I got a smile. We're going to go to work today and we're going to continue to broadcast this World Cup. But man, oh man, for a country that has not had a whole lot to cheer about, to get up today and to know that we are hosting this World Cup, and the World Cup is coming back to the United States in its in the Men's World Cup form. Oh, it feels so good. Are you feeling good, Mossy?
Feeling very good. It's a game changer for me personally, because I feel like my career will be cresting come 2026, and I could perhaps be one of the media faces of that tournament.
Oh, yeah, I think so too. Good things for all. All right, listen. let's not stop what we're doing here. Let's get forward. We will bring you this the State of the Union to the best of our abilities. We know from an audio perspective, this is a little renegade. This is a little when we're talking about the quality of the audio. I get it. This is like we're going backpacking. You know, we are out in the woods and in the wilderness. I'm not going to apologize for it. You understand this is what we're doing. Mossy and I are in different places, which is different than when we're actually doing the segment. So we ask for your patience and we ask for your tolerance. But we are giving you the State of the Union as much as we possibly can, given our crazy work schedule. But it's a pleasure to be able to do it because there is something happening literally every single day, either on and off the field. We are in ground zero, if you will, of soccer right now for what's happening in the moment here in Russia. And as you will hear, what is happening going forward in soccer from a 2026 perspective. All right. As always, though, whether we're in Russia or whether we're in the United States or whether we're anywhere in the world, we start off our podcast with
Alexi Lawless's State of the Union.
Yes, as you heard, it is time for my State of the Union. A State of the Union that I am going to bring to you from Russia. And it goes something like this. It feels good, doesn't it? I mean, let's be honest, it feels great. At a time when American soccer needs something to feel good about, the news that the Men's World Cup is coming back to the U.S. in 2026 is just what the doctor ordered. Now, make no mistake, this is a seminal moment in U.S. soccer history. This can help usher in a new era of American soccer. We've lived the power of a World Cup. We've seen what it can do for the sport, the country, and the culture. Now, along with our friends from the North and the South, I have no doubt that we are going to put on a show the likes of which the world has never seen. But the World Cup is not a panacea. The circus leaves town. It is simply an injection, a stimulant, an accelerant. But it can help propel the game forward in a country that needs all the help it can get. The legacy of the 1994 World Cup is felt and seen in everything from Major League Soccer to the U.S. Soccer Foundation to the supporters' culture to the media to multiple generations who were forever changed by the event, including the guy talking to you right now. So today is a day of celebration, a day to be proud of what we have done and what we will do. It's plenty of time to argue and debate our problems, but I'll tell you what, this is not one of those times. It's a great day for soccer and a great day for America. Enjoy the moment and savor what is to come. The World Cup is coming back. And that, my comrades, is this week's State of the Union. All right, David Mossy. The news came down. The United States, Canada, and Mexico hosting 2026. Thoughts?
Very exciting. Agree with everything you said. I'm very curious to see how this three-team World Cup is going to, three-host World Cup is going to pan out. And obviously the majority of the games, we should say, are in the U.S., 60 of the 80. Mexico and Canada will be channel 10. Now let me ask you this. The after all the anxiety of the last few months, the vote ended up being pretty overwhelming. It was 134-65. So do you think this was ever really in doubt? Or in the end, the clearly superior bid was going to win out? Or do you think the U.S. really needed to make a big push here at the end, and that's what tilted the balance in their favor?
I think that the voters and the members of FIFA, and we'll remind our listeners that for the first time ever, all of the membership voted, and it was public. And so we got to see after the vote, who voted for us, who voted for against us. Thank you very much, people in places like Russia, which voted for us. Scratching your head when it comes to a place like, I don't know, Nicaragua that voted against us. I think when all was said and done, Carlos Cordero, the current president of U.S. Soccer, and all three countries, they did a lot of work. You know, we will have time to argue different things and legitimate things, but when it comes to the amount of time, effort, and resources spent on securing this bid. These folks did a lot of work. And so I think ultimately the membership of FIFA looked at this. The assessment that FIFA did, where the United States came out in those rankings of the criteria, where the U.S. was right on top, I think that helped a lot, because as I said in previous State of the Union podcast, that gave people an out, because the disparity between the grades that the U.S., Canada, and Mexico bid got versus the Moroccan bid, it was big. And I think a lot of people could hang their hat on that, and they did. But man, oh man, I think that there was if the United States, Canada, and Mexico lost this bid, it was not for lack of work or lack of trying. I think that they left no stone unturned, as they said, and I think it showed ultimately in the voting. And when it comes down to it, Monsi, money talks, man. And the $14 billion perspective of what that World Cup is going to generate in 2026, which $11 billion, so it's in total $14 billion, $11 billion to FIFA, that matters. When you're talking about $50 million per member generated by this World Cup, that is a strong selling point. And while I watched the bid's final ask at the conference for FIFA, and we had young players from all of our three different countries talking about what it would mean, but then that panel went up that said, this is how many billions of dollars. And I'm not saying people changed their mind at that point, but that was the money shot. That was what I think drove this, because there are plenty of people that voted for us that don't like us. There's plenty of people that voted for us that don't like our policies. And I say I mean the United States, our policies, our politicians, whatever it ends up being. But as I said before, they held their nose because they knew they were going to make a boatload of money. And it was the logical choice. And I think ultimately our bid looked good. But Gianni Infantino looked good, and FIFA looked good, because there really was no other choice when you compared the two. And we benefited in the end. And I don't know about you, Mossy, but I start to think now about this beacon that exists out there 8 years from now. It's something to work towards. As I said in the State of the Union, it doesn't solve all of our problems, but coming on air today to start the World Cup, it is such a wonderful message to be able to have in our back pocket to drive folks forward, especially in a World Cup that doesn't involve the United States national team. It was, and I'll tell you this, Mossy, I don't know how you felt, but I am I don't know if you heard, but I'm an old grouch at times. I'm a cynic at times, but I was on the set with Rob Stone when the announcement came through, and you can see the video and hear the audio of it. And it hit me hard in the best of ways, and I cried like a baby. I had no control over my emotions. The makeup team had to come out there, and all of this history and all of this emotion came flooding out in that one moment. Fernando Fiore came flying out of the shadows. I didn't even know he was there. He's bawling like a baby. It was an incredible scene on our set at Red Square, which you will see each and every day from the World Cup. But what a wonderful way to come on air today, and a wonderful message. How did you feel when that moment happened, Mossy?
Oh, I was very happy. Now your tears I can accept. Fernando's reaction I thought was a bit over the top for an Argentine, but I know he's an emotional guy, so I'll give him a pass on that. Now, Alexi, we should address this. You mentioned in passing there the politicians in the hysteria of this announcement, you fired off a somewhat controversial tweet thanking President Trump for his support of this bid. I know the German Federation chief has already come out and said that Trump hurt more than helped, and the U.S. got this in spite of him. What do you make of all that?
I didn't think it was as controversial as you and others. My my brother, who I often bounce things off of, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for how he views things. I talked to him after, and he asked me about it, and he never judges or anything like that, but he asked me about it. I didn't think it was that controversial. Our president was very, very vocal on numerous occasions, both in terms of his Twitter presence and in terms of saying things very publicly about this bid. And in doing so, if you ask Carlos Cordero, and I did at the time, and I certainly met with him just a couple of days ago, and once again that question came up about, does it help or hurt? And he was very, very clear that the presence and the very public support that the president gave was not detrimental to the bid. And so I thought that it was I thought that it was fair, and I thought it was valid to thank him for doing that, as I would any president. And it doesn't mean that I agree with everything that this president or any other president has done, but it doesn't preclude me from recognizing the value and being able to thank someone for their support of something that is so personal. And so, you know, look, each and every day, Masi, as you know, there are people that agree and disagree. There are people that will say nice things. There are people that say horrible things. That's just the way that it goes. But I think that even in 2018, which we are in, having our president, and in this case it happens to be Donald Trump, having our president be supportive of our efforts to do something that is good for our country, by the way, at a time when he won't even be president, and having that foresight to recognize that this is good for our country, and this is good for our countries, all three countries, that's a positive thing. And I know politics will infest and invade everything that we do. And so me saying that, I recognize there are folks out there that are screaming right now on their run or in their car or wherever they are listening to this saying, yes, but you know what? This was a World Cup that was supported and ultimately won under the presidency of Donald Trump. He will get credit. There will people that say it was in spite of his support. But I think having the president of the United States back your bid for the World Cup, I think that was ultimately a positive, and I just wanted to relay that I appreciated that, and I wanted to thank him. And if people have a problem with that, then that's the way that it goes. Did you have a problem with it, Moss?
No, I didn't have a big problem with it, but I know others did. Now, a couple more things on this. Let's end on a lighter note. We're interested to see the degree to which Mexico and Canada really feel like they have this World Cup, because, like I said, it's only 10 matches each in those countries, but this whole notion of three different countries banding together to host the World Cup, I saw last night some folks musing about like a Great Britain bid for 2030, England, Scotland, et cetera. Do you think this could start a trend? And would you be okay with that, with World Cups now being spread out across three or four different countries rather than just one location?
I think we are seeing the end of the single country host for a World Cup. I think that this is going to be the norm going forward. For a number of reasons. Number one, just the sheer size. While the United States certainly could have done this alone, and you can see the disparity in terms of the numbers of games that we're hosting, and this is where I think someone like Sunil Gulati, and in particular like Sunil Gulati, deserves a tremendous amount of credit. He is in the shadows right now, the former president of the United States Soccer, and certainly the leader for a time until he lost, or until he decided not to run again, the guiding light, if you will, of this bid, he saw around a corner. I mean, he had the foresight to say, you know what? While we could do it alone and we could make a bid alone, it benefits us, especially in these times, to do this joint bid. But I think going forward, it is going to be the norm. And it was interesting. I was talking to Ian Wright, who, by the way, was so happy for us. He was as happy as anybody. Ian Wright, a former England and Arsenal legend who is working with us this summer. So you'll see plenty of him on all of our Fox platforms out there and all of our coverage of the World Cup. He was so happy for us and seeing everybody hug and cheer and scream and yell and cry. And we started talking about the possibility of a World Cup that featured England. And the fact that it hasn't been back to England in so long and England hasn't been able to host it is really a kind of a head scratcher. And so I think it will come back to England, and I think it will come back in the form of a joint host. I think this is going to be the norm going forward. Just sheer size, some countries can't do it, and some countries strategically will recognize that this is what we want to do. It's not that it hasn't been done before, but I just think it's going to be the it's not going to be the exception to the rule anymore. And I think that that it's not necessarily a good or a bad thing. I just think that that's the reality of what's going forward. Would you rather have a single country host it?
Generally speaking, yes, but I'd have to see what the combination of countries is. If it's something where the neighboring countries would feel totally seamless to have it in both places, then I don't mind it necessarily. Now, last thing for me, U.S. soccer has gotten in trouble in the past with these Project 2010, Project 2014. Now, in this case, do you think U.S. soccer should set as a realistic goal putting a team on the field in 2026 that is capable of winning that World Cup? Do you think that's plausible at this point?
Yes, I think they should set it, and I think that it is plausible that they not only set it, but that it can happen. I think it's, as I said, it gives us this incredible beacon and light to drive towards. And I think we've already started it, regardless of what happened with this bid. I think we already started it with the United States team that we're seeing, the United States team that actually went out the other day against France and got a point. It wasn't beautiful, but it was populated by a lot of new faces. Young faces, inexperienced faces that are going to be that core going forward. And I do think that this gives us that very, very clear pathway and destination so that, okay, the next Olympic cycle that happens, that's the core of the team that then populates the World Cup in 2022 in Qatar, that then grows from that experience to become the 2026 World Cup. So yeah, I think that, and we can call it Project 2026 if you want, and I don't see a problem with that. Actually, I think it's a no-brainer to focus all of our attention and focus to, yeah, we'd love to peak, to have a good team in 2022, but ultimately peaking in that moment in 2026. Now, as we mentioned, it's going to be not just a different World Cup in terms of the multiple countries that it's going to be hosted in, but the size of it with the 48 team World Cup, even the groups now and the strategy that goes into groups of three as opposed to group four. Now, having groups of three in the past, but for the most part, the norm in modern soccer has been groups of four. And there's a whole strategy that goes into how you approach a group of four. We're going to see it on display here at the World Cup here in Russia, but you got to change it to groups of three. So all of that kind of stuff is going to play into, I think, ultimately having the best possible team and looking to field a team in 2026 for this World Cup that, well, it's not going to be happy to be there because that's going to happen no matter what, but ultimately is geared towards winning the World Cup in 2026. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think that is wishful thinking. And I don't think that is unrealistic, putting together a team that can compete for the World Cup in 2026. Wouldn't you want to do that if you had this 2026 beacon out there?
Absolutely. No question about it. I don't think they should be afraid to put that out there, that is the goal. And yeah, in the midst of all this negativity the last few months, I think we've seen here the last couple of friendlies that there is a interesting young core of players to build around. And I'm sure more will emerge over the next 8 years, because for all that's wrong with U.S. soccer, they have been doing some good things at youth level. That was in evidence last year at the under-17 and under-20 World Cup. So, yeah, I agree with you. Why not put that out there and say that that's the goal? And let's strive towards that.
All right, look, we have so much soccer to get to this summer and so much soccer to happen before the 2026 World Cup. It's a wonderful message. It is a time of celebration, but not just for the 2026 World Cup. It's a time of celebration because the World Cup is upon us. And I know the men's national team is not involved, but the World Cup is here. All of the stories on and off the field we are going to talk about, it is all going to be, not infected, that's not the right word, but it's all going to have this thread of 2026 and that positive backbeat, if you will, of what is happening here. And I couldn't be happier as an American, as a person of this soccer culture. The World Cup is coming back. I don't think anybody can spin this in any other way, whether it's me, you, anybody else out there, any other way than this is a positive thing. This is a good thing for soccer. We all have our problems. We all have our agreements or disagreements with the way that we are doing things in the United States when it comes to soccer. But this, I think we can all agree on, is a good thing. This is going to ultimately be good for soccer in the United States. It's going to be good for the culture of soccer in the United States. And really, when it comes down to it, this is a good and a wonderful day for soccer in the United States and Mexico and Canada. The World Cup, as I said, is coming back, and I couldn't be any happier. All right, moving on. All right, as we said, this is a kind of different State of the Union podcast. The format isn't going to be the same. We are going to move on to what we are calling our Fox Sports Power Rankings. This is where we are going to rank our teams 1 through 10 as it relates to this World Cup. So I'm going to give you the 10. This is, now, look, keep in mind that this is our Fox Sports Power Rankings. We certainly have had input, whether it's myself or Mossy or all the other folks when it comes to Fox. You can agree, you can disagree, but this is in the moment where we think these 10 teams are, it would be 32, but the top 10 because of what they have done on and off the field. So, all right, so right now, these are our top 10 here. I'm going to go from 10 to 1. So 10 is Colombia, 9 is England, 8 is Portugal, 7 is Belgium, 6 is Argentina, 5 is Uruguay, 4 is France, 3 is Brazil, 2 is the defending champs Germany, and 1 on our Fox Sports Power Rankings right now as we talk to you on the first day of this World Cup here in Russia, España, Spain. So that is our top 10. It will change as we go forward, but I was telling somebody, Mossy, the other day that, you know, I'm this grizzled veteran when it comes to these World Cups. And somebody asked me about it, and many people have asked me about what to expect. And I told them, here's what's going to happen. Somebody is going to be sent home. Somebody is going to get sick. Somebody is going to fall in love. Somebody's going to fall out of love. Somebody's going to scream and yell at you. Somebody's going to say something incredibly nice. You're going to have an experience the likes of which you've never seen. All of these different things happen during a World Cup. We find out that already, and by the way, that applies to not just the teams and the players, but all of us covering it and just the general community that is at a World Cup. But we find out from a player perspective and a coaching perspective that somebody's already been sent home. Our number one team in our Fox Sports Power Rankings, Spain, in what has got to be unprecedented, and Mossy, you'll be able to tell me better, but in unprecedented fashion, they fired their coach, Lopetegui, the man that, by all accounts, has done a really, really good job over the last couple of years, just signed an extension to continue to coach Spain. They fired their coach. Now, this comes on the heels of him announcing that he is going to, after the World Cup, be the next coach for Real Madrid. Good gig. He wouldn't be the first coach to take a prime gig after the World Cup, but I think what this comes down to, Mossy, and explain to me a little bit more, is that the timing of this happening right before the World Cup and the fact that the Federation was not aware that this was going to happen, and this gets into all the politics and all the Barcelona-Real Madrid drama that exists and has exists. They were not happy about it. But to take this unprecedented step of basically 2 days before they start the World Cup, firing their coach, this blew my mind when this thing came out. We were in the midst of the 2026 World Cup announcement, and this comes out from a media standpoint. This is great. This is gravy. This is manna from heaven. I am loving it because I get to talk about the craziness that is the World Cup in the context of this coach getting fired. Mossy, thoughts when you heard that this was happening? Because I know you were firing off emails and texts early on when rumblings of this started to come, and I didn't believe it. I didn't believe that this was going to happen, and not only did it happen, but it happened very, very fast.
Well, first off, it's unprecedented in World Cup history, but there is a precedent in American sports. My beloved Michigan Wolverines fired their head coach, Bill Frieder, on the eve of the 1989 NCAA tournament because he announced he had taken a job with Arizona State, and they installed little known assistant Steve Fisher at the helm, and they went on to win that tournament. And I bring that up because Gerard Piqué, of all people, evoked that in a tweet yesterday, which made my day. Gerard Piqué firing off tweets about the 1989 Michigan Wolverines basketball team. I couldn't believe that. But, yeah, this was incredible news. Listen, I think Lopetegui is an excellent coach, very good hire for Real Madrid. So my initial reaction when I saw that news was my first tweet was, hey, great hire by Real Madrid. They did well. And then it was later that day I started reading the scathing columns in the Spanish press about the timing of this. It's ridiculous. It shows you Real Madrid thinks they're above everybody else. And I can't believe how poorly this was handled. This is going to be a major distraction. And I started to realize, oh, my God, there's a big story here. And so, as you mentioned, I sent some emails to our producers. I said, this is something we need to chat about. But chat about it in the context of, is this going to be a big distraction for the team during the tournament? But never imagining that it would lead to this. But then I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning, and I went to the same Spanish newspapers I always check, Marca, Oz, and I saw this headline, Lopetegui hanging by a thread. And so I immediately sent a follow-up email to my producers and said, this is even bigger than I thought. And I think I included you and Rob on that email. Like, this guy might actually get fired today over this. And then it was amazing to see the story escalate throughout the day because Marca were covering it like minute by minute, and it kept changing. They said in the morning that now cooler heads have prevailed and folks in the Federation have talked to the president, Luis Rubiales, and talked him off the ledge. But then when he left the FIFA Congress to go from Moscow to their base in Krasnodar, then it started up again that he's going to get fired. But then when he got there, they were reporting that the players had stepped in and convinced him not to fire him, and then he got fired. So it was this topsy-turvy back-and-forth thing. And listen, the more you read about it, it was really atrocious the way he handled it because, as you mentioned, he signed an extension just a couple of weeks ago until 2020, and he's been negotiating with Real Madrid the last few days and didn't give the Federation any indication of that. And the president was only told he was taking the job 5 minutes before the announcement came out. So I can absolutely understand the president being incredibly annoyed, and Lopetegui and Real Madrid deserve loads of criticism for this. But in the end, it is a World Cup. You have a team that's in position to possibly win this tournament, a coach who hasn't lost a game yet in 20 games in charge, and the players clearly wanted him to stay. So I think you can make a very strong case that in the end, cooler heads should have prevailed and they should have kept him. But this is the way that the president decided to go, so we'll see how it pans out.
I think that this was personal, ultimately, when you look at it, because when it first, as you said, started to percolate, I said, they're not going to care. Do you think that the Barcelona players, because this is all in the context of Barcelona versus Real Madrid. And I do believe that the reason why this came out was because Real Madrid said, you know what? Not only are we big, but we are ultimately bigger than the Spanish national team, even the Spanish national team getting ready to prepare to play in a World Cup. And it was a thumbing your nose at everybody else and saying, the World Cup's going to come and go, but Real Madrid's still going to be there. But when it first came out, it didn't even occur to me that any player, and certainly the players from Barcelona, because they were now being coached by the future coach of Real Madrid, Gerard Piqué is not going to play any differently because Lopetegui had just taken this gig. I guarantee they all said, yeah, you should take that gig. It's a great gig. And notwithstanding the incredible rivalry that exists out there. Now, Mossy, I ask you this, because keep in mind, these are our Fox Sports power rankings. These are not necessarily what we feel individually. I happen to agree with this list, but these are a culmination of a lot of different folks having their input here. Does this news about Lopetegui change where you would put Spain? In that, do you think that this is ultimately detrimental in terms of what Spain is going to do in this World Cup? So we have them on our list as number one. Because of this, would you change it? Or because of another reason, would you change it?
No, I thought about this all day yesterday, and I know that this sort of stuff can go either way, but I think they're going to rally around. We should say it was Fernando Hierro, who had been serving as the sporting director, who's now going to step in and be the coach. And he's a guy I'm sure you faced at some point in your career, legendary player, ironically enough, for Real Madrid and obviously the Spanish national team. He played as a central defender and holding midfielder most of his career, and he's one of the leading scorers in Spain national team history, which is amazing. Tells you the kind of player he was. And he's a guy that'll walk in and have respect in that dressing room right away. He even joked yesterday that he hopes to be Spain's Zidane, which was an interesting reference in the context of all this. But he is a Real Madrid legend after all, so I'm sure he has it on in the brain. And so I think this is going to go the positive way. I think they're incredibly motivated after how they performed in the last two major tournaments, 2014 World Cup and Euro 2016. So it's an experienced group. I'm sort of contradicting myself because I picked Spain to win it in large basis because of how good a coach I think Lopetegui is. And now you take him out of the equation, and I'm still picking him to win it. So am I saying the coach doesn't matter? But in this case, I think the work's been done, and now it's about going out there and playing. And I still think they have the best team, so I'm sticking with them. But one last thought on how this whole Lopetegui thing play out. I mean, we could draw this line all the way back to Zidane's shocking resignation because, you know, Lopetegui, his background, he played for Real Madrid, he coached the Real Madrid B team. This is his dream job. But I'm sure as he was getting ready for this World Cup the last few weeks, in his wildest imagination, he never thought the job would be available now. So in slight defense of him, this has all happened very quickly here in the last couple of weeks. Zidane resigns out of nowhere after winning another Champions League title. They go for Pochettino first, realize that that's going to be difficult to pry him away from Tottenham. And then I'm sure it's only been in the last few days here that they turned to Lopetegui and really got serious with him. So it's not like he's been sitting on this news for months that he's been negotiating with Real Madrid. So this whole thing here happened very quickly. There was a pretty small window for everybody to get on the same page. But again, it's got to be more than 5 minutes before the announcement is going to come out. And it'd be interesting to see how much blame is put on Lopetegui, how much is on Real Madrid. I would suspect that if it was up to Lopetegui, he would have rather have waited to announce this until after the World Cup. But it was Real Madrid that wanted to get the news out there that they have a new head coach. And so Real Madrid just kind of trampled over everybody here and put this out. And it even caught Lopetegui somewhat off guard by choosing to do that. And so, you know, I think ultimately the blame lies with Florentino Perez because he got his coach, his incoming coach, fired, who by all accounts is a good man and loses a chance here to manage in a World Cup because of how they handle this. But yeah, I mean, the fact that this all traces back to Zidane's shocking resignation. And now Lopetegui, you know, Spain's first game is against Portugal and Ronaldo, whose future with Real Madrid is up in the air. So, I mean, the subplots here are just endless. I mean, it's amazing how this all works out.
Well, you mentioned that it would be a wildest dreams type of scenario, maybe for Lopetegui, but not for his agent, because obviously they had something in place that would enable this to happen and some sort of trigger. So they recognized that strange things happen, because not only did it happen, but it happened very, very quickly. So there either was some sort of release clause, some sort of buyout clause when it came to teams, or maybe even a specific clause in there that said if Real Madrid comes, because as you mentioned, he had just signed an extension. But this was Real Madrid flexing their muscle and grabbing the headlines in a moment when, to be quite honest, Lopetegui didn't need it and Spain didn't need it. But I agree with you. I think that this is an incredible, in a strange way, a motivational type of occurrence. And I think the Spanish Federation, they probably had their finger on the pulse of what the team was. And had they recognized that changing Lopetegui was going to send them into a spiral, they wouldn't have done it. But I think they recognized that they could do this. And what they could do was provide this motivational moment, stand their ground against a Real Madrid, and do both of those things at the same time and not lose out and maybe even come out of it on the other side better. They did it. But I will say that the Federation, which was, because we were gearing up for the FIFA Congress, which was happening here, announcing the 2026 World Cup, and all of a sudden these news stories started coming out that the membership and the president of the Spanish Football Association had stormed out and was on his way to talk to the team. And it's in real time. And this is something that happens in World Cups. The world is focused on this. And so nothing's really secret. And these stories break and the world starts talking about it. And nowadays with Twitter, it gets that much more focused and real time. But it was fun to watch. And there will be more stories that come out during the World Cup like this. But what a way to basically kick off this World Cup with this incredible story to talk about. As you mentioned, I think it transcends the game. Because you can find other instances in or compare and contrast with, do you think that this would be good for this team or this in this context? So this is a fun thing to talk about. When I look at this top 10 list, I would have Mexico higher. I would not have Portugal's at 8 right now. I'm not sure I would put them at 8. And that's something we're going to talk about going forward on the State of the Union podcast. I'm good with this list right now. I know people will have Germany at the top, or people will have Brazil at the top, or people will have, you know, France and Uruguay and these types of teams, and Argentina with Messi. But that's what a list is about. It's fostering debate as we do. This is not necessarily our list. Is there anybody before we move on here, Monsi, and get out of here and do our jobs here of bringing the World Cup to you on Fox? Is there anybody on this top 10 list that you would disagree with in terms of where they start up, or somebody that's not on it that you would like to have on?
No, I was pretty pleased with the 10 teams. I was going to bring that up, that I know in the conversations that were being had that you made a push from Mexico to be in that top 10, and they got bumped out, essentially for England. So that's a fun debate people can have, England versus Mexico. But, you know, Argentina at number 6, above Belgium, that's a bit of a reputation pick. You know, they pedigree, they were finalists in 2014. I think you could make a very good case that on current form, current roster, Belgium are actually a better team than Argentina. I'm not as down on Portugal as you are. Like I said, I think since 2016, they've actually added some good attacking players, and Bernardo Silva and André Silva and Gonzalo Guedes. So Ronaldo has a bit more help there, and I think they could actually be pretty frisky at this World Cup. Very happy to see Uruguay up there at number 5. People are coming around. I've been on the Uruguay bandwagon for months. I like that team. I have them getting to the semifinals in all my brackets. And you know, it's funny because all these Spanish turmoil has overshadowed what's been a pretty wacky buildup for Germany with this controversy involving Ozo and Gundogan taking pictures with the Turkish president, and you know, some lousy results in losing to Austria and just speaking by Saudi Arabia. So I know there's some concern in the Germany camp, but I think they'll be fine. Once the lights go on, they'll be very good. So no, I mean, the list as a whole, I think is pretty solid. I'm willing to stand by it. You know, I might tweak a thing here and there, but overall, I think it's good.
All right. Well, listen, that is our top 10 list. It will change as we go along and as these twists and turns happen. It is our Fox Sports Power Rankings for the World Cup as we sit here talking to you on the day that the World Cup starts. We recognize that it will change. We recognize that you may or may not agree with our top 10 list. So let us know. As always, with the Ask Alexi hashtag, on the State of the Union, we will continue to update it and change it as we go on, and all of the different things that happen. All right, Mossy, shall we move on?
Yep.
All right, moving on. All right, we're going to do something here a little bit different. As we said, the State of the Union podcast, while we have certainly had a template, if you will, over the history of this podcast, it's changed because we are at the World Cup. Everything's a little bit different. Mossy and I are not at the same place, and so we are doing this each and every week and still giving it to you. What we wanted to do was kind of go through rapid fire, if you will, and kind of hit a player for each and every team in this World Cup. I know that many of you out there are well-versed in many of these teams, but not all of these teams, and even the diehards out there that know a tremendous amount of soccer, there's only so much that you can know. So we wanted to kind of go through each and every team, and we're going to do this rapid fire. It's going to be very, very quick, so don't worry. We're not going to get into the weeds when it comes to all 32 teams here. But look at a player from each and every team and just get a little quick nugget here. So, Mossy, right off the bat, we are, as we tape this, we are about to witness the opening game. So Russia versus Saudi Arabia. Russia, I think, is going to be a huge, huge story as a country and as a team, all the pressure they're on. Okay, rapid fire here. For me, Mossy, Golovin. All right, Alexander Golovin, the young Russian midfielder, looking to use this World Cup to spark his interest from the big clubs. Anything to say about Golovin from Russia?
I agree. You can make a case for the striker, Smolov, but I prefer Golovin. I think he's their best player.
All right. They are playing against Saudi Arabia. Mohammed Al-Salawi. The good news for Saudi Arabia fans is that he scored 16 goals in qualifying. The bad news is, though, it was against teams like Laos and Cambodia. You think he can continue his goal-scoring prowess at a much higher level?
I do not, but I think you have to go with him. 16 goals is 16 goals. That's an amazing record in qualifying, so I agree with that too.
Okay, Mo Salah from Egypt, the king of pharaohs, coming off a club season. I guess you got to say for the ages, but last I checked, I don't think Liverpool is in the World Cup. Do you think Mo Salah continues on this torrid streak of scoring? Number one, he's coming off an injury. Number two, he's playing for a much weaker type of team and has much less talent surrounding him than when he's at Liverpool. You think he does anything at this World Cup?
Well, he's certainly their best player, so we're 6-3 in agreement, but I don't think he has a great tournament. I already thought he was going to arrive at the tournament tired after the season he had at Liverpool, and then you throw in this injury to boot. So Mohamed Salah here could be a bit of a letdown for people here. I don't think he's in the greatest shape entering this tournament, but obviously Egypt's best player.
All right. You love Uruguay. You have for a number of months talked about how you love this Uruguay team. Luis Suarez, the man, the myth, the legend. The dude was kicked out of the last World Cup for biting an opponent. But as is always the case, we forgive those who score goals. You think he's going to score goals and you think he's going to behave himself?
I do. I did detect a little bit of slippage in Suarez's game at Barcelona this past season, but if my life was on the line, I would still take him over Cavani any day. Cavani, to me, is a bit of a big game bottler. So it's basically between those two with Uruguay. And I still think Suarez is a better player than Cavani. So I take him as Uruguay's best player. And, yeah, I think he has a very good tournament.
All right, moving on to Group B, Cristiano Ronaldo leading the way there with Portugal, maturing like a fine Portuguese wine. But does that wine turn? Is there any slippage when it comes to Cristiano Ronaldo?
Yeah, I do. I think we saw it in the two legs against Bayern and the final against Liverpool. You know, I've been banging this drum for a while. I know people get mad, but when he's not scoring goals, you can really see the deterioration in the rest of his game. Now, the good news is, as I mentioned, he does have some help on his Portugal team, more than he had at Euro 2016. I think the emergence of guys like Andres Silva, Bernardo Silva, Gonçalo Guedes are going to take some of the pressure off him. But yeah, I mean, his World Cup track record isn't great. Only 3 goals across 3 tournaments. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if he struggles again this time around. But obviously, you have to pick him as Portugal's best player.
All right, we talked so much about the fact that Lopetegui leaving Spain. David De Gea in goal for Spain. Not only the best goalkeeper in the world, but I would arguably one of the best players in the world. Does he stand on his head for Spain this summer?
You know, De Gea is a great call. I thought long and hard about that. You could certainly make that case. And yes, I see no reason why he's not going to have a great tournament. But I'm going to go with Isco here. I know based on each player's club pedigree, maybe you wouldn't go that way. Obviously, when you have guys like Ramos and Piqué and Iniesta and Busquets and even David Silva. But I think for the national team, he's really flourished under Lopetegui. He had that hat trick in March against Argentina in that friendly. And I think he's primed for a monster tournament here. So I'll peg Isco as their best player at this World Cup.
All right, we're talking Group B, so we move on to Morocco with Hakim Ziyech, the star midfielder. This is a guy who fought with the coach. He quit the team. He came back. He made up with the coach, and then he went and scored 2 goals. So do they need to pick another fight with this guy, and do you think he has a good tournament?
I do think he has a good tournament, and I picked him as the breakout player of Group B in those things we did that we posted on Twitter. Yeah, big fan of this guy. 2 seasons ago, he helped Ajax get to the Europa League final. They lost to United. We covered that tournament. I think he plays well here and gets a big move after the World Cup. So I think he's their best player. And yeah, very high on him as well. Hakim Ziyech.
All right. Now, you are a stickler for detail and for pronunciation. So Alireza Jahanabash, and I know I butchered that, because I'll get it right when the red light turns on and I have to do it on television. The 24-year-old for Iran, he tore it up in Holland, and he's looking to kind of blaze a trail here to a bigger club with a solid World Cup. Number one, do you like him? Do you think he does anything this summer for Iran? And did I pronounce it correctly?
In the ballpark. I'm pleasantly surprised because I thought you were going to go Azmoun, and he'd be a good pick too. The interesting thing about Iran is they have the Iranian Messi in Azmoun and Jahanbakhsh, who's been called the Iranian Ronaldo. So the whole Ronaldo-Messi debate is playing out within the Iranian camp, which is interesting. I lean towards, although Azmoun has a much better international scoring record, based on club form, I lean towards Jahanbakhsh. Because, as you mentioned, great season with AZ, led the Eredivisie in goals, first Asian player ever to lead a top European league in goals. So he's flying going into this tournament. And yeah, he's been linked with bigger clubs. So yeah, I'll go with him as their best hope for success and their best player right now in current form. So yeah, we're on the same page on that one as well.
All right, moving on to Group C. We obviously have France, Antoine Griezmann. This is an incredible young player right now and talked about constantly for moving on. He shined at the Euros, remember that. Do you think he, what does he do for an encore, if you will, this time around?
Well, first of all, he's handled his club future a little strangely here because he called a press conference in which everybody thought he was going to announce his next destination. And the press conference was just to announce that he wasn't going to talk about it. And so it was a bit pointless, frankly. But, you know, the signs seem to be pointing towards him staying at Atletico Madrid and not going to Barcelona. They signed Thomas Lemar, which is a very good move for Atletico. And I think that he might have been talked into staying. Now, a little bit controversial here. I love Griezmann. Certainly a fine pick on your part. But you know how high I am on Mbappe. And I think I got a bit of a scare the other day in training when he limped off, but it looks like he's fine. So I'm actually going to go on Mbappe here. I think he has the highest ceiling of any French player, and we're going to see it at this tournament. I think if he's healthy, he's going to go Pele 1958 on us, have an absolute breakout performance, and we're going to come out of this tournament feeling like Mbappe is actually France's best player, not Griezmann.
All right, Australia, all eyes are going to be on Tim Cahill, the man, the myth, the legend, the old man is back for one more round and ready to produce some more magic. We've seen him do it time and time again. Is Australia going to have to rely on Tim Cahill to get them any kind of joy this summer?
No, I think his role's been reduced a bit. I wrestled between Aaron Moy and Matthew Lecky for this one. I think both those players at this stage of their careers, I would rate above Cahill in terms of importance for that team. I would go Aaron Moy. Very good season in the Premier League for David Wagner managed Huddersfield. So I think right now he's probably their most important player with Lecky a close second. So that's the way I'm going on that one.
All right. Peru, such a wonderful story. 36 years away from the World Cup. They're back with an interesting team, a wonderful coach in Gareca. But the soccer gods did smile upon them recently when their star player, Paulo Guerrero, was declared that he was eligible to play after facing a ban. Does he grab on and embrace this World Cup and be that, and yes, I said it's a get ready to drink, the talisman, if you will, for Peru?
Yeah, absolutely. Guerrero is their best player, their all-time leading scorer, and he showed, you know, two goals against Saudi Arabia, and that finally didn't miss a beat. Keep in mind, he played it two times for Flamengo here recently, so he's not coming into this completely rusty. And yeah, I mean, I like this team even without Guerrero. They look good in some friendlies recently. They've got some other players I like in Carrillo and Tapia and Flores. But no, if Guerrero's in there, then he's got to be their best player. And yeah, I think he's primed to have a very good tournament.
And then Denmark, Christian Eriksen, he is the man for this team. Good enough to carry this team through qualification, but is he good enough to carry this team out of the group stage?
Yeah, I picked Denmark in my first bracket, so I kind of felt obligated to stick with that, even though I mentioned recently that I'm actually leaning Peru now. But yeah, Eriksen, if Denmark can get out of that group and go far, I think he has some James Rodriguez potential. I know the podcast I missed you did with Rob, one of the Ask Alexi questions was, who's going to be the James of this World Cup? And Eriksen would have been a candidate for me in terms of a midfielder who's maybe not known for scoring goals, but is going to pop up and score a bunch of goals in the tournament. He was prolific in qualifying for Denmark, had that hat trick against Republic of Ireland in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think he's primed for a very good tournament as well. We could see him scoring more goals than you'd think here and really helping them advance.
All right, Group D, starting off with Argentina and obviously starting off with Messi. The only thing missing from his incredible career is an international trophy. Does he get it this summer?
Yeah, I'm actually going Willy Caballero. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, no, of course, Messi. But, yeah, I just don't think he has a team around them. I think this is going to have a bit of a LeBron James, Cleveland Cavaliers feel here. Again, there's only so many of those strikers that they can start at one time, and that's the only position I think they're strong at. I think there's all sorts of questions in goal, at the back, in midfield. They lost Manuel Lanzini, which you never want to lose a projected starter on the eve of a tournament. But the fact that Manuel Lanzini was a projected starter is to me is an issue in and of itself and makes you kind of reflect on where this team is at right now. And, you know, they're dealing with They also lost Romero. You know, I don't want to get into this too much, but this crazy Sampaoli story where he was accused of sexual harassment by an employee in the Argentine Federation, but they're standing by him. I guess the reporter that broke this story has a bit of a shaky reputation of getting a lot of stories wrong. So, but in any event, you know, we talk about Spain and their turbulent camp and also Germany. Argentina's had a terrible buildup to this World Cup. They had that friendly against Israel canceled. So to me, they have all sorts of issues. Yeah, of course, Messi's the best player, and of course, I think he'll play well, but I don't think it's going to be enough. I see him losing in the quarterfinals. So, yeah, I don't think he gets his elusive World Cup title this time.
All right, continuing on in Group D, Iceland, the darlings of the tournament, a romantic team in terms of their backstory, but they do have stars in the form of Gylfi Sigurdsson, on a team that is greater than the sum of their parts. This midfielder, this creator, is someone that I you got to say Iceland can't afford to be without. Although he's coming off of an injury, is he going to be everything that people want him to be for Iceland?
Yes, definitely their best player, definitely their key player. I do like Finn Bogason, the striker up top. We cover him in the Bundesliga, but yeah, Sigurdsson's fit. I think you have to go with him in this pick. Although I'm a little worried about Iceland at this World Cup. I don't know if they're going to live up to what they did 2 years ago, but if they do, it'll certainly be because he's leading the way.
All right, Croatia, Luka Modric. You got to go with Luka Modric, little blonde general running around the midfield, dictating the flow and providing that that killer pass. Anybody else that we should look at, or are you good with Luka Modric?
Good with him. I mean, this team is loaded. A lot of different ways you can go. Mandzukic, Perisic up there, even in that midfield, Rakitic, Kovacic. But Modric is their best player, no doubt. I'm fine with him.
All right, Nigeria, also in Group D, John Obi Mikel. He seems to transform into a different player with Nigeria, you know, with this powerful leader and this attacking force, which is not necessarily the role over the years that we have seen him play when it comes to his club, you know, his club performance. But he's got to be the guy to look at when it comes to Nigeria.
He's certainly a good pick. I'm actually going with Ahmed Musa. I know he didn't have the best time at club level this past season, but, you know, he played well at the last World Cup. I still remember the game where he scored two goals against Argentina, him and Messi kind of dueled back and forth. And in the Champions League in recent years for TSK, he scored against some big teams. So, and I like him. I think he's very explosive. I remember when Leicester first got him, I thought it was a great signing. I've been spectacularly wrong about that. But still, I think he's a good player, and on his day, can be pretty dynamic. So I'm going to go with Musa here as my pick.
All right. Halfway through our 32 teams in the World Cup, picking out a player from each team, we move on to Group E, Brazil, and it's got to be Neymar. He's back from injury. Mossy, your beloved Brazilians. Will Messi Will Neymar, be rusty or rested for Brazil this summer?
Dirty little secret. I don't think he's played that well in these two friendlies. He's looked a bit rusty, a bit tentative, but he scored beautiful goals in each of the games against Croatia and Austria, so it sort of covered that up. But as you mentioned, he has a chance here. He has a very good team around him, not the toughest group to kind of work his way into form over the course of the tournament. And yeah, Alexi, I'm having to contain my optimism here because Chichi is going, it looks like, with the lineup that I like, with Coutinho in the midfield, William, Neymar, and Jesus as the front three, and Brazil are looking very strong while Spain and Germany are having all this turmoil in Argentina, as I mentioned. Meanwhile, Brazil's it's been camp happy, and they're egging everybody, and they're running around. Everybody's happy and smiling. There seems to be a great harmony on that team, a lot of confidence, and so a very positive outlook for Brazil at this World Cup. I think there's a great chance they win this tournament, and Neymar scores a bunch of goals here. And incidentally, he's up to 55 international goals at the age of 26, tied with Romario for third all time. He's only got your dinner companion, which we can get into that at some point, Ronaldo at 62, and then Pele at 77. I think that Pele record is very much within reach for Neymar, and hopefully at that total here in this World Cup. So, yeah, obviously Neymar's the pick here, and very optimistic about the outlook for Brazil this tournament all of a sudden.
All right, for those listening, what Mossy is referring to for a couple different things. Number one, video emerged from training session the other day for Brazil, laughing, having a good time, and it was Coutinho's birthday, and Neymar was the instigator of having a bunch of different eggs that he went and gotten. They hit over the head, and then they threw powder over him. It just showed that this is a team that is relaxed, that is ready to go, and Neymar was at the head of all of this. And then the other thing that he mentioned, we were at a establishment the other night, and this is what happens in a World Cup. Everybody descends on these different cities, and you see everybody and anybody. And we showed up, and there was Ronaldo. There was Ronaldo just hanging out at the bar. We had a picture as a group. Mossy was not with us at that time, to his eternal dismay. We got to see one of his idols, but this kind of happens on a daily basis as you're walking around Moscow. You see all these different faces and all these different legends out there. So it will not be the last time. So who knows, Monty, maybe you'll still get your chance to meet some of your idols out there. Brazil playing against Switzerland in that first game. So Switzerland, Sherdan Shaqiri, the nickname for him is the Magic Dwarf. Enough said. This is a man that you got to look at, right, Monty?
Absolutely. Shaqiri is a pick here. He's their most explosive, dynamic player. I picked Breel Embolo is my breakout player for this group. I think he could have a good tournament, but Shakir is a safer pick here, so we'll go with him.
All right. Our friends from CONCACAF Costa Rica, they had such an incredible tournament 4 years ago. I don't think it's going to happen again, but if it does happen again, they're going to have to rely on Keylor Navas, the incredible goalkeeper, the Real Madrid goalkeeper, for Costa Rica to take them as far as, well, as far as he wants, because he's going to have to be very, very good.
Agree. Ray Hudson's favorite player is the pick here, Keylor Navas. So I don't think there's much debate about this one. When you're the starting goalkeeper for Real Madrid, winning all these Champions League titles, I think you're certainly your country's best bet as well.
All right, Serbia, some interesting players, including Milinkovic-Savic, the hyphen, if you will, in that midfield, and he will always be hyphen, and so it's going to take us a while to say that name. One of the hottest summer transfers out there, all sorts of links and rumors to him when it comes to where he's going, but he is going to have to be completely focused in Russia, but he's one to watch.
Absolutely. For a big man to be that nimble, I actually watched a lot of Lazio this season. I find him to be a fun team to watch under Simone Inzaghi. I love Felipe Anderson, the Brazilian is on that team, but the guy that really caught my eye this season was Milinkovic-Savic, and yeah, he's been linked to Manchester United, and talk about a 100 million euro transfer fee, that might be a bit much, but no, he's a wonderful player too, and even amidst experienced guys like Matic and Ivanovic and Kolarov, I think he's the pick. He's their best player for sure.
All right, Group F, for me, the group of death, starts off with Germany and one of the great players of the game and certainly arguably the best goalkeeper of the last, let's say, 5-6 years, Manuel Neuer, but he's been out for, gosh, it's almost been about a year, has not had a lot of playing time. Number one, Mossy, do you think that he can bounce back? And number two, if you're the coach, do you actually start him if he is able to play, given the fact that he hasn't played for so long?
Well, I'll say this. If you're not going to start him, then don't even bring him. So the fact that he brought him, I think now you should start him. But it's a tricky situation because you do have another excellent goalkeeper in Ter Stegen, who I think is blossomed into one of the 5 or 6 best goalkeepers in the world. And is very good with his feet, too. So you don't lose that element that you have with Neuer. It's not like a Sven Ulreich situation where you put him in there and then he does what he did against Real Madrid. So it's a tough call. But, I mean, like I said, now that the tough call was whether to put him on the squad or not. Now that he put him on the squad, I think you have to start him. And yeah, I think at the end of the day, Neuer will probably be fine. I don't think they're going to win or lose the World Cup on that. Maybe he won't. Maybe his reflexes won't be quite as sharp. He won't make that one or two incredible saves that he would have otherwise made if he was healthy. But yeah, I think you start him, and I think he'll do well enough. That'll make one of my Twitter followers, Ryan Matthews, very happy. He's a big Toni Kroos fan. I think. On a team that, as good as they are, don't really have that really flashy superstar. So, you know, you're going to the midfielder here that's not going to score a lot of goals. But I think he's the guy that stitches everything together, and I think he's their most important player. And I did very well at the last World Cup, had 2 goals, 4 assists, and coming off another Champions League title with Real Madrid, I think he's primed for a big tournament here.
All right, our friends from Mexico, Irving Chucky Lozano, they call it Chucky, we can call it Chucky. Either way, he's named after the Chucky doll when you look at it. I mean, this is an exciting young player who could possibly be the reason why Mexico not only get out of the group, but get to that elusive 5th game in a World Cup.
I'm with you. Lozano's the pick here, clearly the best player now. I mean, Chicharito still attracts a lot of the headlines, but if they're going to do anything in this tournament, it's going to be because of Irving Lozano coming off great season with PSV, and he'll be in that starting lineup for Mexico in this tournament and probably their greatest source of inspiration. So he's the pick here for sure.
All right, moving on to Sweden in this group, Emil Forsberg, Bundesliga fans, you know we broadcast the Bundesliga, so you'll know all about him, but do you think that he has a breakout summer and the rest of the world now finds out about him?
I do. Didn't quite scale the same heights with Leipzig this past season that he did 2 seasons ago when he had, I want to say it was the most assists of any player in Europe's top 5 leagues. Numbers a bit down this past season. Leipzig finished outside the top 4, but now he's a class player. In this post-Zlatan era, he's kind of assumed the mantle as their big star. And so, yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely going to be the guy leading the way here.
All right, and rounding out Group F with South Korea, Son. We know him from Tottenham. Now, I'm going to digress here a second because you are our researcher and writer extraordinaire, as we've talked about, but you're also making sure that we are there on pronunciations. What are we doing for pronunciations? Is it when people hear us calling games, is it going to be the name on the back of the jersey? Is it going to be the legal name? How are we doing this? We all know Son from Tottenham, as we've said, three-time winner of the best player in Asia award. Certainly is going to have to be big for South Korea going, but just give us an idea of what we are going to do in terms of our etiquette for names.
Well, FIFA just put out some of their official documents regarding rosters and stuff yesterday. I haven't had a chance to look it all over, but we will defer to FIFA, folks. So if you see something on the screen at Fox that you don't agree with, it's not because we decided to go off willy-nilly and do what we were going to do. We defer to FIFA on this stuff. So they put out all sorts of documents, official rosters of what they consider players' names to be. And, yeah, you have this issue with the South Korean. Is it Heung-min Son or Son Heung-min? And so we are essentially going to go with whatever FIFA goes on that. And so send your complaints to Johnny Infantino if you disagree.
All right, well, I'm coming down here. Group G, as we know, Belgium just loaded with talent, so difficult to pick one player. But if you're going to, all eyes are going to go to Kevin De Bruyne with the vision and the passing skill that we have seen for Man City. Is it going to translate into this Belgian team?
Well, to me, this is the most interesting debate of this whole 32-team field. I've actually been having this debate with people for the last several months as to if you told Roberto Martinez he could only have one of these two players for this tournament, the other was going to get injured in the lead-up or whatever, Hazard or De Bruyne, which one would he pick? And although I agree with you, in terms of my general rankings of best players in the world right now, De Bruyne probably edges Hazard. I think you can make a very good case that at the international level, that he would opt for Hazard. I think they rely on him so much for creativity and inspiration. And I think coming off the disappointment of how this Chelsea season went, Hazard is going to be really motivated here to have a big World Cup and kind of reinvigorate his brand, if you will. While De Bruyne is coming off a season with Man City where he played a lot of games at high-octane style where they pressed the whole game and he has to really work hard in midfield to win the ball back. I don't know. He might be a little gassed here. So, I love De Bruyne. I think he's the best midfielder in the world, but I actually slightly lean Hazard here as Belgium's most important player at this tournament.
All right, Panama, our friends from Panama, and certainly an MLS influence, including the man Roman Torres. We've seen him with Seattle, and we've seen him with Panama, just a big center back and a legend when it comes to Panamanian soccer. He broke American hearts. But, of course, he'll never have to buy a drink again in Panama. Is he able to translate this into a World Cup performance? Is this a bridge too far for him?
Well, he's going to be trying to throw his weight around in Russia this summer. But, a bridge too far. I think Panama are arguably the worst team in the field. I don't see them doing much. And so he's their best player. And, so no disagreement there on that pick. But, I don't think it's going to be enough, his performances, to get him through this group or to make much noise in this tournament. But, certainly a colorful player to have at this World Cup. I'm glad he's here.
All right, a team that a lot of people don't know a whole lot about, I would venture to say, is Tunisia. Wahbi Khazri, he got two goals in his six qualifying matches for Tunisia. Does he and his team have any chance, really, when it comes to this World Cup?
No, I think Belgium and England are the picks in this group. But yeah, Khazri is their best player, especially since they lost Youssef Sakhni to injury on the eve of the tournament, which is a big miss for them. So have to go with Wahbi Khazri here. But again, much like with Roman Torres, it won't be enough. This group to me is top heavy and pretty clear cut, top two that'll go through and two that'll be eliminated. So Tunisia don't make the cut for me.
Well, the question on this group is who finishes first and who finishes second. A lot of debate. I was with Ian Wright yesterday, and I think I'm more bullish about the English team than he is because I have England actually winning the group over Belgium. And if that is going to happen, it's going to have to happen with the likes of Harry Kane continuing to score goals. He is the man up top for England.
Yeah, I don't mind you praising Donald Trump, but if you start praising England, we're going to have a problem on this podcast. But Harry Kane. Harry Kane is the pick, although one little caveat, I love Rashford. I think he's an incredible talent. I know he picked up a knock in training and we'll see what kind of condition he's in, but I actually think he's the most talented player. And much like the Mbappe Griezmann dynamic, where you have a guy who's the more established, better player and has actually done more in his career, but there's another guy lurking that I think might actually have a higher ceiling and more of like breakout performance potential. If you're telling me that some English player is going to absolutely light up this World Cup, I might actually lean Rashford before I would say Harry Kane. But, Kane's scoring record is hard to argue the last couple of years, so I'm fine if you want to go with him.
All right, we'll get into the end here. The last group, Group H, led off by Poland. And when you talk Poland, the first name and the only name, to be quite honest, that you're going to talk about is Robert Lewandowski. So important to Poland. Poland's ranked eighth right now in the world. And a lot of it, if not most of it, is because of the prowess of the man up top, Lewandowski.
No doubt about it. 16 goals in qualifying, and obviously coming off another great campaign with Bayern Munich. His future club level is a bit in doubt here. It sounds like he's grown a bit tired of Bayern and might be ready for a move. We'll see about that after the World Cup, but no question. I mean, there are some other good players on that squad. If Milik's healthy, he's a pretty good striker, but got to go with Lewandowski.
Yes, Robert Lewandowski. Oh, he's so good. We'll see if he can lead that Poland team. All right, coming down here, Sadio Mane. We've seen him just tear up the EPL and do great things for Liverpool. Kind of like Mo Salah, when he goes to the international level, he's not surrounded by as much talent. Can he be the type of impact player that he is with Liverpool with this Senegal team?
Yes, I think Senegal are the best African team. I picked Poland to finish second in this group in all the brackets, but would not surprise me at all if Senegal went through and said they are a bit of a trendy sleeper pick. A lot of people, I know Gab Markati, I saw mentioned Senegal is a team that could go far. Mane is the best player, but you've also got Keita Balde, who can be pretty dynamic, and one of the best center backs in the world in Kalidou Koulibaly, who is at Napoli now and has been linked with his move to the Premier League forever. So I think Mane actually just barely edges Koulibaly out as Senegal's best player. Koulibaly's that good. But when you do what Mane did for Liverpool in the Champions League this past season, scoring in the final, I think you got to go with him. But yeah, I think he could have a very good tournament.
All right, Colombia, which I actually think is going to win the group over Poland. And if they do win the group, it's going to be down to a lot of different people. But mainly for me, Radamel Falcao up top. Thankfully, we get a healthy and rejuvenated Falcao scoring goals right now. We remember 4 years ago, he wasn't able to go because of injury, and that was a problem for Colombia. You think he's ready to shine this summer?
I do, yeah, and it's great for them to have Falcao come back. There's a lot of Colombia buzz right now. I mean, you have the established stars of Falcao, Jimenez, and then these kind of under the radar, Wilmar Barrios, Uribe guys that people are high on. Interesting you went Falcao because I think you got to go Jimenez here, picking up where he left off in Brazil. I don't know if he's going to win the Golden Boot again, but a very good season for Bayern Munich, and we know he relishes the World Cup stage, so I still think Jimenez is the player that it all revolves around, so you got to go with him for Colombia, but Falcao, very interesting as well.
And last but certainly not least, Japan, Keisuke Honda, a veteran playing his third World Cup, key leader for this Japanese side. That, by the way, we were talking earlier about Lopetegui and the craziness going on there. Japan also fired their coach after they qualified, so they're coming in trying to recapture some of that magic after what I think the public and probably privately they felt was playing in a way that didn't suit them. So, do they recapture that? And two, does Honda play a part?
No, there's a sense that Japan are relying on some players here that are a little bit past their best, including the guy I'm going to go with, which is Shinji Kagawa. But Honda's a good pick, too. Yeah, both those guys will be key players there in the midfield. You can even go Shinji Okazaki, who has a very good scoring record at the international level. But no, I don't see Japan getting out of this group. I agree with you. I think Colombia wins it. And then, like I said, it's between Poland and Senegal for second. So Japan have some interesting players, Honda being one of them. But I think some of their best players are a little bit past it here. And so I don't think they make it out of this group, but we'll see.
All right, look, it's impossible to pick one player from every single team, except we kind of just did it. But I think you saw there the incredible grasp that my good friend David Mossy has on these teams and these players. They're all going to be on display. Starting today, we are taping, as we said, on the first day of the World Cup, kicking off on Fox and all of our different platforms here. We've come to the end of our podcast, Mossy. Anything you want to say here? Because next time we hear you, we will be knee-deep into this World Cup. Anything you want to say that we may have missed?
No, just a general comment. I've quite enjoyed Moscow so far, a week or so in. Very friendly people, love the food. I haven't had a chance to explore as much as you have because of where my hotel is and just been so busy with work, but there are some days off coming, so can't wait to make it out to Red Square and the Pushkin Museum and all sorts of sites around town that I have ticketed that I want to go to. So But so far, impressions very good. Very, couldn't be more excited for this tournament and a great location. You could tell people are very fired up here. It's going to be fantastic.
Well, I'm going to echo those comments. It has been wonderful so far. The people here, the city, it's a place that I have never been, and to be able to explore it and, as I've said before, see it through the eye of the, through the lens and the eye of this World Cup, is just wonderful. And it just gets bigger and bigger and more exciting and more colorful each and every day with this World Cup. And now that the games are starting, we actually have something, something to talk about. A couple of things before I give you my final thoughts. As you're listening to this, you recognize that the audio quality is very different than in a normal podcast. Apologies to a certain extent, but you understand that this is renegade podcasting, if you will. And we are trying to do this in two different places. It's not always easy. We'd like to continue to give you this diet of the State of the Union podcast. We hope that you appreciate it. We will continue to do it going forward because there's going to be so much to talk about. And as the Lopetegui story showed, it just constantly changes. And these are stories that the world is going to be talking about. Speaking of the world, this is the World Cup. It is the biggest party in the world. And that party, my friends, is coming back to the United States and being shared with our friends to the north in Canada and our friends to the south in Mexico. We are going to come on the air today. I'm going to go and take a shower and put on some makeup and try to get pretty to the extent that I can and go on air. And we are able to come on air at Fox to bring you the World Cup with this incredible message that 8 years from now, we will be broadcasting a World Cup, a men's World Cup from the United States. This is a game changer. This is something that we need to recognize the value in. And I think that we will. And this is a wonderfully positive message to come on the air with at a time when U.S. soccer, let's be honest, it's been through a hell of a year and not a whole lot of good and positive type of messages have been out there. And whether it's the fact that the U.S. men's team didn't qualify for this World Cup, whether it's the craziness surrounding the president of the election for president of the United States Soccer Federation, it hasn't been a great year. And to have this kind of feel-good moment, I wish you were all on the set with me and with Rob Stone and with Fernando Fiore and everybody in front of the camera and behind the camera, and just to see this collective elation and joy at the news that we were going to host. I will tell you this, our set overlooks Red Square. And behind us, there were fans congregating. And the moment when it happened, and you can see it online, when we got that bid, everybody started screaming and yelling. And so many people from out in the courtyard there, if you will, were screaming back up to me, giving me the thumbs up. And everybody was just so happy, whether they were Mexican, Canadian, or U.S. fans or not. The recognition there that we are going to host the Cup in 2026 was not lost on them because they knew that was the U.S. compound broadcasting. And so it was a wonderful, wonderful moment, a great way to come on air, a feel-good story. We will, as I said in the podcast, use it. It's not a panacea. It doesn't solve all of our problems, but it is a wonderful, wonderful thing to have and to look forward to in 8 years' time. But before that happens, we got a World Cup. It is upon us. It is about to happen. It's no longer we have X amount of days or X amount of months or X amount of years. It is happening today. It is starting today. I cannot wait to start broadcasting this World Cup and for the games to happen and all these different stories to emerge. We're going to bring them to you each and every week, and we're going to continue to do that on the State of the Union podcast. I appreciate you tuning in. I appreciate you with your patience and your understanding when it comes to the audio right here, because we're operating on a bunch of different fronts. We look forward to giving you more State of the Unions and giving you the stories that matter. These are going to be global stories. This is what the world is talking about, and not just the soccer world, but oftentimes the world in general. And we will bring it to you each and every week. Thank you so much for tuning in. The Ask Alexi segment isn't part of the podcast, but Ask Alexi is not going anywhere. If you have questions, if you have comments, if you have concerns, good, bad, anywhere in the middle, make sure you hit us up on Twitter. Make sure you hit us up on Facebook with those comments and questions. And we will, going forward here in Russia, find some of those and answer them. Because while we will be trying to suss out what the biggest stories are, there will be questions out there. We want to know what you want to talk about going forward when it comes to this World Cup. All of the different platforms that you have out there, whether it's games on Big Fox, Homer Simpson Fox, whether it is games on FS1, whether it is our digital platform that you are accessing right now, all of those different things, we're going to have a robust presence, if you will, going forward. And you can find everything and anything that you want when it comes to the ins and outs, the ups and downs, all the twists and turns when it comes to a World Cup here. So with that said, I hope that you have enjoyed this podcast in a little bit different form, and we will talk to you again next week. So as always, size the debt.